Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, October 27th, 2010. Tech News Today brought to you by Ford and voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more, available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And by Carbonite, backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com, offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I am Becky Worley.
And I am Jason Howell.
And we are going to kick the Schmidt out of some tech news.
Yeah, we are.
We're not going to discuss Google's CEO
again.
No,
not today, actually. This is a Schmidt-free podcast.
Yes, Schmidtless.
That's right. We have been scared Schmidtless.
That's right.
Well, then let's just move on to another tech company.
Yeah, how about Sony?
Yeah.
Any Sony fanboys in the audience?
They're going to be happy.
They're going to be pretty stoked. PlayStation phone. There are pictures. Joshua Topolsky posted them up on Engadget and supposedly has some... They got a little defensive because Sony actually said, fakes. Those are fakes. Then Sony backed off and went, "We don't. We don't comment on rumors and speculation."
And this rumor's been out for a long time that there's, you know, some sort of a gaming phone coming to Sony Ericsson, their platform, and now the details are leaking a little bit more explicitly, not just with schematics and drawings, but with an actual picture.
Explicit details.
Explicit details. A 1 gigahertz Qualcomm Ooh. Chip. That's similar to the one in the G2, but a little bit faster.
512 megabytes of RAM.
Oh, yeah. 1 gigabyte of RAM. And the screen
is ugly.
Yeah, but this could be big.
Yeah, that's true. 3.7 to 4.1 inches.
And the thing that's cool here is it has a slider pullout that is a game controller. So you would assume, if this is correct, that the on-screen controls for the phone would all be touch-oriented. I guess you could use the sort of 4-button, 5-button controllers. But it's just, if you're into gaming, this is the phone you want. It's the gaming device that you will always have with you that, oh yeah, doubles as a phone.
Right. If you're a Sony gamer, right?
Yeah, because
iPhone and Android, they got plenty of games.
And they have
some good games. They have some big games.
And the Windows Phone 7, people would say, if you're an Xbox gamer, then you're going to want a Windows Phone 7 phone.
Because you can stop your game on the phone and pick it up on the Xbox. This is going to be a Sony Ericsson phone, it looks like. And Gadget has said, look, we've got multiple sources on this. We trust this. We know this is real. It's going to happen. The reason it's so ugly in the pictures is that it's a prototype.
Yeah,
they haven't finished the design yet. They haven't put the Sony-style touch on it. But it's got, you know, the left and right pads. And it's supposedly going to play games. And I don't see a slot. It doesn't have any onboard storage listed. So we don't know if that would just be SD card or if it would be some memory stick thing. They say there's no memory stick slot here, but there is support for micro SD. So I guess you'd put your games on SD card.
And not all
Maybe
the specs.
It'll come with one.
Yeah, and not all the specs were listed out. I mean, there's a lot of discussion in some of the comments around the Engadget story about what the GPU's power will be, you know, if it's going to have enough juice to really be a compelling gaming device. The other thing is the battery. Will you get more than 1 or 2 hours of play out of this thing if you're really going hardcore? Would you have, you know, multiple batteries that you would cycle in if you really wanted to be outfitted on the road? Lots of questions. It's just a rumor mill at the moment.
And this would be a Sony-branded
Sony Ericsson
PlayStation phone at this point, because wouldn't that be kind of confusing versus the PSP, which is their other portable device? I can't imagine this would play PSP games.
They've got the PSP,
right,
and then they've got the PSP Go, mm-hmm. which gets its games over the air. It doesn't have a slot,
right.
So how would this be any different than just saying it's a PSP Go with a phone in it?
Yeah, I guess
it would be the Sony Ericsson PSP phone.
Yeah, but it's running on Android. Like, is the game mode a separate mode from Android, or is it built into the OS?
Yeah, it could just be an app.
Yeah,
I guess so. Almost.
Yeah.
Run like an emulator of some sort, but it wouldn't be.
It's a fair question, but yeah. I'm assuming that. And frankly, assuming it runs well, right, I think it's going to depend on what kind of games you can get for it.
Absolutely.
To push people towards it, because otherwise they're going to be like, look, you know, I don't want to have to get the PSP phone and be locked into Sony Ericsson, maybe I want an iPhone. Maybe I'd actually rather have an Evo 4G or a Samsung Galaxy S phone because of these other things that I want to do with it. This seems to be a phone that's like, I'm a phone and a game machine and that's it. So it's going to have some big titles to go, oh, I can't play that. I want to play that on my phone.
But hold on, because if this is an Android phone that lets you customize in the way that we've really grown used to with the smartphone platform, I think this is actually a no-brainer. This is value add. Why wouldn't I? So it's a little bulkier, but if it's a full Android phone, why wouldn't I get this?
I can put all my Twitter apps. I can put all the same apps. It's just about form. It's about form factor rather than operating system.
It's fat, but it's one less gadget or device to carry with you. I think it's a winner.
I mean, I have...
If you're a fanboy.
Motorola Droid with a slide out, and I never use the keyboard. So, hey, I would go for a little bit fatter if it meant that I could actually use that for something. I'd use it for nothing.
Yeah, instead of having a keyboard, you have your game control in there.
Yeah.
All right. Apple is about to... Well, Stacey Higginbotham at GigaOM says Apple is about to cut out the carriers. Sources inside European carriers say they've been working with Apple to create a special SIM card technology along with SIM card manufacturer Gemalto. And it's rumored that the way this would work would be a SIM card built into the phone. So it's non-removable, but it's programmable. You would run through a download at the App Store as opposed to visiting a carrier or calling the carrier, and it reduces the role of the carrier in the iPhone purchase. So in the U.S., you may think, well, what's the big deal? It's AT&T. That's all I got. But if AT&T loses its exclusivity, especially to somebody like T-Mobile that's GSM, or more importantly, in Europe where they already have multiple carriers, you would be able to order the phone off the website, plug it in, pick your carrier through iTunes. And the SIM would be programmed for that carrier rather than having to get a SIM card from the carrier.
When it comes to that logistical aspect, I think this is a win for consumers because if you can manage this yourself through iTunes, it does become easier. If that's sort of a dashboard for your device, then I think that's better than having to deal with the carrier directly or go to the store or get a physical SIM card to put in there.
Yeah.
The questions that arise from this are... One, how does this change the subsidies that you get when you buy a phone from a carrier? I mean, assuming you're still locked into the contract, you won't have the option to flash that SIM card and start over again with another carrier.
You're
going
to have the same subsidy from all the carriers to make a subsidy work.
Right, or you have to make the call, negotiate your way out of your contract before you can flash it and move over to another carrier, which you sort of have to do anyways now. I mean, it's a little bit of the details, but... I think this really could be a benefit because it lacks the physical necessity to change out the SIM card. In terms of how it applies to the market conditions, I mean, look at the UK where we already have five carriers that have the iPhone available. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
I mean, it's to them, it's like physical or not physical. If it came with them, it would just be like, yeah, okay, great, no problem.
Well, and it'd be good for roaming in Europe, right? Because apparently the SIM is flashable. The ROM area contains data provided by Gemalto with everything related to IT and network security. And there's a flash component that will receive the carrier-related data by a local connection, which could be the PC or could be a dedicated device that you plug in. And that activates it on the network. So you could easily say, oh, you know what? I'm moving from France to Germany. I'm just going to switch carriers. In which case, maybe you're not tied into contracts that way, and you're not worried about the subsidies all that much.
Matt in the chat room says, well, could people just jailbreak the internal SIM to switch? Or, raises an even better question, if you jailbreak your phone, how does that impact the programmable SIM?
Here's the thing, right? If you jailbreak your phone to unlock it, this is going to have a negative impact. But you don't have to jailbreak the phone to unlock it, it sounds like. Because, theoretically, that flashable component can be flashed from the carrier, no matter what. The carrier won't know if you've unflashed it from somebody else. So it theoretically would make it so you didn't have to jailbreak it to unlock it, or at least would make it easier in some way. I guess they're going to lock that down. That's a good question, though, how that's all going to work. MySpace is getting a reboot. Remember MySpace? They've pretty much thrown in the towel. This new reboot will allow you to post to Facebook and Twitter from MySpace, but it's built around sharing entertainment media. They're basically repositioning themselves as a way to share your thoughts about music, TV shows, all kinds of entertainment. You get achievement points for being a popular or frequent sharer. Now, not of files necessarily, but of links to things.
Recommender.
Recommendations.
Right. Your tastemaker.
Beta version is going to be available by the end of November.
You know, and the thing is they are really making a hard play for the hip Gen Y, you know, audience.
That's what this seems like, right?
Yeah,
it's very like Lady Gaga.
Oh, yeah.
Glee, cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's 13 to 35s. And, you know, you just kind of get the sense that it's a bunch of guys, young guys in black turtlenecks thinking about, hey, let's make this really hip for the young crowd and re-energize ourselves. And on that note, we want to show you some of those minds who are really making it hip and cool and fresh.
That's what you like about the reboot. What's going to be
sure,
cool?
Sure, this is a completely new product for MySpace. We're engaging in a new strategy called social entertainment. It's a product targeted at our Gen Y audience, and we're very excited about
it. It's a new strategy called social entertainment.
Hey.
And this is different from what you used to do. It used to be a social network, right?
Absolutely.
I could find my friends
real
quickly,
right? We're not social network. We're social entertainment.
Find your friends on
That's
MySpace, but the goal here is to connect you with what you love in entertainment. So your favorite movies, your favorite TV shows, your favorite celebrities.
For those of you who aren't watching, we got a bunch of...
They are twins.
No, we got a bunch of old white dudes. Dudes trying to talk about what's cool and what's hip and hooking you up with the younger generation. And it just, I'm sorry, we had to set it up given their marketing sort of spin on it, that it's so cool and it's so young and it's so fresh, and it just feels so desperate when you watch this video.
We've renamed the limited mission social entertainment, which makes it new.
Right, and that we have to give Bloomberg a little credit. They did the interview, so it's Bloomberg. It's not like MTV doing the interview. So
it's not the Yo MTV Raps.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean,
these guys think Yo MTV Raps is still on the air.
It's Yo, hip so that the kids can share their Yo MTV Raps. You know,
they got both kinds of music, hip and hop. Thank you, Ken Shepherdson, for writing that joke.
I mean, what we're questioning here is there a space for MySpace? I mean, they're talking about social entertainment. That's what Facebook is. Hello, what is missing on Facebook that this is what niche is this going to fill?
I think it's a great idea to say, okay, you know what, we're going to try to find a niche. I don't know that this is a niche that anyone wants to go to them for, although music is one of the reasons people are still at MySpace.
So, I kind of feel like that's part of why they chose to do this. They were like, well, people know us for music, so let's, you know, let's gather around that and make that hot again.
Fair enough, but what they really did is they gave a publishing platform for indie or up-and-coming musicians. They didn't say, hey, I mean, this whole pitch that they made on Bloomberg was about Glee.
Yeah.
I mean... That's not what this is going to... This is not going to break them out. They are holding on to a sinking ship, and they're not floating any new balloons here. Well, so I say, no, not happening.
Not going to save them.
No.
But it might consolidate them. Because even though their traffic has been declining, they're still got a huge audience. So maybe this way they super serve that audience and keep them and say, look, you can. It's okay. Don't leave us for Facebook. You can still use Facebook. And then we'll integrate into that
and be
your music platform.
Huge audience. I mean, maybe they still have members, but really?
Yeah, they have like a 50-plus million active audience.
God, I can't. It must be international. I'm just not buying it.
All right, let's take a break while Becky wraps her head around that. And thank Ford and voice-activated Sync for their support of Tech News Today. If you want to be able to drive your car safely and be able to communicate with all of the new technology that you have in your life, Ford and voice-activated Sync is the way to go. You can make phone calls. You can play music or podcast. You can make and receive text messages. They're read to you. It's available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. Stuff like traffic is pretty awesome in Sync because you get personalized traffic alerts. It knows your route and sends you alerts like, hey, there's some construction here. You might want to go around that. It'll even reroute you with turn-by-turn directions if you want. To learn more about Sync, you'll want to go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's standard on some Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury models and optional on others. Most Bluetooth-enabled phones work with it. You just get in, and your phone that's Bluetooth hooks into the system, and you're ready to go. You can even plug in media players like an iPod or a Zune, and then you just talk to it. Say, hey, call Becky at the office. Tell her I'm late. It's true hands-free calling. Have your text messages read to you. Ford and voice-activated Sync at SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Go check it out. The FTC says, yeah, what Canada said about Google Street View. That's fine with us.
Stern talking to.
A letter was sent to an attorney representing Google on Wednesday from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission saying that it is closing its inquiry into Google's inadvertent collection of Wi-Fi packet data. David Vladek, director of the FTC's Bureau of Consumer Protection, said Google's recently announced improvements pretty much cover it.
Yeah, I mean, what more? In some senses, the interesting stuff is just coming out in terms of last week Google saying, yeah, we actually did get some email information and some personal, you know, data and people's names. So the interesting, the data is actually coming out about what happened. But I think the realization is Google did the big mea culpa. They said it was one person. They've just now, last week, said they promoted one of their engineers who's going to serve as a director of privacy. And I think it's important that it's an engineer. You know, you have to have someone from within and within the culture who can communicate at a level to all the other folks and say, hey, this really is important. So, I mean, Google's doing it. I still am just like, meh. Whatever. I think this is the right call from the FTC.
Yeah. Well, Spain doesn't. Spain's still after them. They're going to put in disciplinary measures. They're going to fine them, it looks like. Anyway, everybody else is pretty much kind of washed their hands of it. Germany said, well, you have to allow people to blur out their houses. Italy said you have to let them know when they're coming, which is going to make for some great fun Google Street View. Because in Italy, you'll know
you'll
it's
know.
Coming, and you can set up some stuff.
What can you do with that kind of information?
Canada said you have to do all these fun. Things. Yeah. Google said, great, we're doing them. And the U.S. said, yeah, what Canada said.
We just follow our friends to the north.
Video is beating P2P file sharing, according to Cisco. That's one takeaway, at least, that they found over at New TV from the Visual Networking Index. Video traffic, which includes streaming flash video and streaming video via peer-to-peer. So it's not P2P versus streaming. It's streaming video versus file sharing. Streaming video made up 26% of data traffic worldwide, according to Cisco, compared with 25% of traffic made up of P2P file sharing. And that's a big decrease for P2P, which accounted for 38% of worldwide data traffic in the last year, the last time they did this survey. But they don't think there's actually less P2P file sharing going on. They just think there's that much more streaming video.
And the question comes up is, does this just mean more people are aware of video streaming? I mean, we heard data last week that only about 25% of the online population has actually streamed video, which is mind-boggling to me. But what the question comes down to, is it an awareness that's rising the tide all the way around for video? Or is this that people are saying, you know what, there's so much available video out there that I'm just not even going to bother with P2P. It's just not that easy when you compare it to the other easy, free legal sources.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of, ooh, file sharing could get a virus, might get a legal notice, might get tracked. I'll just go to this website where I don't think I'm violating the law and I'll stream the video. And whether that website is Hulu or YouTube or some Taiwanese video streaming site that's actually giving you unauthorized video, it's just a lot easier. And I think people feel like it's a lot safer to go to those than it is to go through the whole business of trying to get a file and wait for it to download. It's immediate if I can stream. With BitTorrent, it might take me a couple hours to download a video. With streaming video, if I can find it, I press play. I'm going.
I think, you know, when you look at this, how it's playing out in communities and amongst friends, the early adopter will have said, dude, I just got this latest movie off of BitTorrent. I totally downloaded it. Let me show you how. And the friend says, oh, hey, burn me a DVD of that. And then he goes home and he's like, BitTorrent, what? And maybe he's a little intimidated by it, doesn't follow up and do it himself. Whereas early adopter says, oh, you got to go check out Hulu. Oh, you got to go check out this site, you know, and they're boom on it. And anybody else can replicate that because it's so web-based and simple. So
yeah, you just send a link.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the adoption curve is much more consumer friendly for legal sites. It's just a no-brainer.
Or illegal streaming sites. I mean,
fair enough.
You know, there's a lot of those out there, too. And they sort of defer the responsibility off of you when you click on, hey, I just clicked on a link. Right. I didn't actually download anything.
I mean, I stayed there for 3.5 hours, yeah, but right. Whatever.
So I think the fact that it is instantaneous and it's more pervasive is what's going on. There are actually a bunch of stats out recently how digital downloads of music may be flat this year or even decline in sales. And they're starting to look at the streaming sites, the Pandoras, Slacker radios, those sorts of sites. Mm. To say, you know what? People just don't want to own the file. They don't want to mess with it. It's too difficult. It's too complicated. And then I lose the file. And where did I back it up?
Yeah.
And you know what? I just want to stream it. And only if I really love the song am I actually going to want to keep the file.
Right.
U.S. and the EU are both having different reactions to rare earth supplies being restricted.
I love this story.
I love the band Rare Earth. Why are their CDs being restricted?
Rare earth supply?
Are you ready?
Sadly, we're not talking about an indie band, but minerals.
No,
Tom,
they're
minerals.
Classic rock.
Rare earth. Oh, yeah. Okay. You got to educate me, see?
Yeah, we're talking about rare earth metals that are used in most of the technology that we have sitting in front of us right now. And China is almost the only source for a lot of these metals. Mm. So there are noises coming out of China that they might reduce the export of rare earth metals. And the U.S. Department of Energy said she was not aware of any companies experiencing disruptions, but they're concerned that they might be. So European Trade Chief Karel de Gucht was asked in a seminar whether he planned legal action. He says it's clear we're monitoring the situation closely. We need to have clear facts. There's a bunch of laws being pushed forward in the United States to punish China if they cut us off and also develop rare earth supplies that the U.S. controls. Beijing, for their part, has said, you know, we're not going to choke off the shipments of minerals, but they have talked about putting in some curfews. Not curfews, but some limits.
I think that a couple of interesting points here. First off, just for context, we're talking about neodymium. I've never even heard of neodymium. A lot of green tech products need these, especially batteries for hybrid cars, LED lights, fuel cells, solar panels. So, I mean, that's what we're talking about is the green energy economy. That's one place where this is really critical. Secondly, the recycling rates for these types of minerals and elements are only about 1%, according to a UN panel on this. So one thing it could lead to is a lot higher recycling rates. And if you think about the recycling rates for copper or aluminum, those are more, you know, depending on the substance, 25% to 75%. So we could see a lot more recycling. And then I think the most interesting point here is that you quoted Diana Bauer, who heads the Department of Energy's Critical Metals Task Force. Mm-hmm. We have a Critical Metals Task Force?
Oh, yeah, we do. We need one.
Well, it's critical.
It's that's one of those moments where I'm like, okay, big government really is big.
No. This one is military-based. The reason we have a Critical Metals Task Force is those metals are not just used for making your MacBook Pro. They're used for making guidance systems for missiles. And you want to make sure you don't get that supply cut off. Mm. If we do start to have a shortage, that's where they're going to go first, I have a feeling. Mm. Things like that. So they're critical metals for that reason, I think. Not for your iPhone. Although
many people might consider the iPhone the critical metal. Critical metals.
I think it's going to be a new series on CBS. Critical Metals Task Force. Come in to check your metal recycling.
CMTF New York.
Yeah, right.
I just want to celebrate another day of living. All right. Finally, Barnes & Noble kicked off the e-book war, or extended it or something. With the Nookler yesterday.
Iterated.
However, Slashdot points out that there is a new approach coming from a different company called Wowio that specializes in offering digital versions of comic books and graphic novels that may be extended to regular novels by putting them out as free PDFs with advertisements.
The part about this story that brings the conversation forward is it reminds me a lot of that Neal Stephenson book, Snow Crash, where there's one device that a kid has from the time that they're very young, and it serves as their educational tutor. And as a parent, you kind of wonder, gosh, ebooks, is that what my kids are going to have? Is this, you know, a Nook, along with the Nook Color, they also announced a big push towards kids' books and storybooks. We're not talking about, like, you know, Narnia and Harry Potter. We're talking about young kids' books. And you kind of wonder, okay, well, if young kids' books take off, and then we look at this format that we're talking about from Wowio, where it's comic books and sort of your Mad Magazine kind of genre that has advertising in there, is this the future for teens, tweens, and kids?
Could it actually change the advertising model too, right? So on the internet right now, everything is like, well, it has to be clicked, has to be tracked. This isn't trackable.
No, this is branding.
Trackable the way a magazine is trackable. Right. It's an old idea, put it in a new way.
Right.
And if you suddenly say, hey, you know what? Your kids have access to free books. There's just a little ads in them for some cigarettes. No big deal. No, you're going to have a lot of restrictions on what those ads can be, obviously. But you may be willing to say, okay, I'll let my kids see some toy ads if I can keep them supplied in a bunch of free books that keep them occupied.
Yeah.
Do kids read enough for this to work?
Well, if you're spending $139 on a reader, that's a year's, you know, it depends on what you spend on
and a
books.
Reader that can play some movies. Because that's really and has some games
and music streaming and stuff like that. I mean, I think it is a market. I don't know if that's where it's going to go, but it brings up a business model that's old and new again, all over again.
Yeah, everything is old is new again. All right, I want to thank our other sponsor, Carbonite, the leader in online backup. My Carbonite is backing me up right now to make sure that the files that I've selected are safe and sound in the cloud. I can restore them from Carbonite. If something should go wrong, I can find them online on my phone. I actually get a BlackBerry app or an iPhone app and access. I can actually access them from other computers. If I leave this computer somewhere, I'm over at somebody's house and I'm like, you know what? I have this file. I need to give it to you. Let me log on to Carbonite. All the files from my documents directory are all backed up there. So it's cloud storage. It's peace of mind. It keeps you safe from disasters. You don't have to think about it. It happens in the background. I've used some other backup programs that interrupt you. They let you know, like, hey, I'm backing you up right now. You might want to not do anything because I'm going to be doing that. Carbonite doesn't do that. It just goes off in the background, helps protect all those valuable files. And it's really affordable, $55 a year. I think that ends up being like 15 cents a day. That's right, 15 cents a day. So try it for free. If you don't even like 15 cents, you don't even have to pull out a dime and a nickel. Go to Carbonite.com, enter the offer code TNT. If you decide to buy the service, you'll get 2 months free with that. So you don't even have to start paying that 15 cents a day for 2 months. Be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage if you want to get the 2 months free. No credit card required. Just sign up. Try it out. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TNT if you want to give us credit. Don't give somebody else's code. Or else the show goes away.
Hey, we need your love.
Yeah, exactly.
We need your love. Hey, I need to send some love to the chat room because they just helped me with a correction. It wasn't Snow Crash. It was Diamond Age.
I wondered. I was like, I don't remember that from Snow Crash. No. But then I didn't want to say for
Thank
sure.
You. Thank you, chat room.
That's great.
Appreciate it.
All right, chat room, are you ready for the news fuse?
An Elks Lodge in Taunton, Massachusetts used their wily secret world government connections to swing a 10 gigabit per second fiber connection installed by Verizon. Sure, we're told it's a test by Verizon to see if they can get that 10 gigabits working on their fiber. But we all know this is just another step in the Elks' mission to dominate the world.
The Elks run everything now, even the bandwidth. 7 out of 10 people store sensitive information such as medical and bank details on their mobile phone without any security at all, says a shocking new research from security firm Juniper Networks. They also found threats on mobile devices have jumped 250% this year. Coincidentally, Juniper's just come out with a new security suite for smartphones. In unrelated news, TNT Research has come up with a study that awareness of tech news has declined 250%. The solution? Subscribe to Tech News Today.
That's all you have to do.
Easy.
HP is not holding back on the Palm Love. Chinese-based CENSCOM is reporting that manufacturers Foxconn and Compal now have contracts to manufacture up to 6 new Palm devices for 2011. Presumably, one of those devices is a webOS tablet, but who knows what other palmery may lay in store.
Google's a little sensitive about appearing innovative since Bing came on the scene, so they've been rolling out monthly innovations. Last time we got the instant search. This month we get place search, which delivers location-specific news results by organizing results around a place. Kind of the way Google News aggregates news information around a story. Place search is rolling out now and should be available globally within the next few days.
Meanwhile, Bing rolls on. Microsoft's Ad Center is now officially powering 100% of Yahoo's owned and operated properties and its publisher network in the U.S. and Canada. According to the companies, that means marketers can now use one account for their search advertising campaigns across both the Bing service and Yahoo. They're relying on the laziness.
Yabbing. Yahoo isn't going to be left out of their own innovating, though. Yahoo Mail is getting its biggest redesign since 2005. Remember 2005?
Vaguely.
Yeah. You'll be able to Twitter and Facebook from within Yahoo Mail, get better spam protection and easier searching, and even see photos and videos inline. It'll be just like you're using Gmail or Hotmail.
Tom, stop.
Except you're using Yahoo Mail.
The NPD Group says it is expecting a 1-3% decline in sales for the approaching holiday shopping season for tech retailers. Consumers just aren't moved to buy big ticket items like televisions, they say, or laptops or high-end cameras. Also, prices are just too stable, meaning no big price wars to pry open consumer wallets. Does this mean we won't see the crush of humanity on Black Friday?
I wonder if Black Friday will be injury-free this year.
Doubt it.
There may it'll be like a colorful Friday. It won't be nearly so black.
Yeah, it'll be gray Friday. Yeah, right. It's like sort of, you know, earth tones Friday.
Yeah, off-white Friday.
You know what? I go to Best Buy every year at 5 in the morning to cover it. And between that and Walmart, there is always a crush of humanity.
I guess what this is saying is Walmart might still have the crush. Best Buy, it'll just be big. Everybody's going to buy smaller things. That's what it sounds like. They're not going to make the big money off the big ticket items. That's what I got out of that.
I don't know. I'm not buying it. I cry bunk.
No, nobody's buying it. That's the problem. All right. Finally, 61% of Americans said the president should have the ability to shut off the internet when he wants. Well, just because he's upset.
Not exactly.
President says, I don't like what you said. I'm cutting up. No, that's not exactly what he said. This is the internet kill switch, which is sort of misnamed. It's the idea that you could get corporations to turn off parts of the internet to block malicious cyber attacks. This, according to research by Unisys, apparently this is because U.S. citizens don't know how to keep their own security. The survey also found that only slightly more than a third of internet users in the U.S. regularly use and update passwords on their mobile devices. So we're basically saying, look, we're not good at this. We're going to cause a problem.
Right. When we the U.S., have basically perpetrated a DDoS on our own government and businesses, Mr. President, can you please save us from ourselves?
Yeah.
Is that basically what we're seeing here?
Or that kind of seems to be the attitude.
I think that there's nobody would have any problem if they felt like it was, you know, like one of those situations that they saw overseas with the Balkans and stuff where, you know, you're like, okay, let's just shut off the IP addresses where we're seeing the
and
attack
that's what,
coming
that's
from.
That's what it's supposed to be, right? Is it that we do a little bit of network management that the president can say, look, there's a cyber attack coming. I ask you to shut off the backbone until we can take care of this.
I mean, how else would it happen? Would you have to have a congressional act of Congress? Would you have to just call the companies and say, hey, would you mind?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think that when you look at the actual mechanics of how government works, okay, this makes sense. Now, the situation that would provoke that, that gets a little more complicated.
It gets tricky when you put any kind of power like this in one person's hand.
Yeah.
On to the calendar.
Da-na-na. Apple. Delaying the white iPhone 4 until spring 2011. I think they're keeping it so that people who go to prom with their white shoes can have a matching white iPhone.
Boy, Genius Report says their sources say they're canceling it altogether.
Yeah, it's just like...
It's just a game.
It is.
There's no white iPhone. People, look me in the eyes. There is no white iPhone.
Tom, don't crush the souls of the white iPhone people like that.
If you know how you get a white iPhone? You send a virgin into the forest. And then you stand behind the bush, and then the white iPhone comes in its sparkly rainbow light.
You've been reading too much sci-fi.
You could just buy a bottle of whiteout.
Or get a white case.
Get your phone. Paint your iPhone.
Exactly.
There you go. That's all you need to do.
Mm-hmm. iOS super secret app developer camp next week down at the Apple headquarters. Tom, it's super secret for the app developers.
Yeah. Yeah, except that they do this every year, and all the developers know it's coming.
Come on.
It's not that secret. It's just a developer camp. Everybody wants to make everything Apple. Ooh, Apple made a phone call.
Mm-hmm. It's super secret.
What does it mean?
It's so secret.
Yeah.
But I guess the idea is that they're working with app developers to try and get them to just basically have a little bit more uniformity, some standards.
Yeah. It's a way to help developers get better at developing apps, which is in Apple's best interest.
But it's super secret.
Don't tell anyone.
Secret. Samsung Galaxy Tab hitting T-Mobile USA on November 10th. $400 on contract. That's a good price point.
Yep.
I think that's compelling.
It's the same as Sprint.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's subsidized too. You have to sign the 2-year contract.
I don't know though. I mean, if it, my thing is, I think if you're an early adopter and you're going to look at this, you're going to wait until CES and see what else is going to be out in the.
Well, you've got two options. You can either buy it subsidized for $400, or you can buy it unsubsidized from Verizon for $600. And if you want to buy it subsidized, you choose between T-Mobile and Sprint. We haven't heard from AT&T yet on this.
Shocking. Acer tablet PC line launching on November 23rd. Price $299 to $699.
More tablets.
And this is a funky one. HP's Envy 17.3-inch 3D laptop. Three-dimensional laptop.
Yes, you mean laptop, it's a laptop that exists in three
not
dimensions.
Flat. It is
exactly.
not
it's like
flat.
This one right here.
It's a new concept. No,
it's not printed on a page.
That's right. I mean, it's wild. It comes with 3D glasses, you jamokes. It's going to be an innovation.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. $15.99.
You want to do some 3D gaming, maybe.
It comes with glasses. Did I mention that?
3D laptop comes with glasses.
Yes.
Is it 3D? Mm.
You know, I just realized I don't have any good, you know, things to call you, names to call you. I got to come up with some some words for you.
Ask around. There's plenty of them.
Schmucks was not quite right. I don't know. I got to work on that. Chat room, save me.
On to voicemail. We got a video sent in. You were wondering about the Ninja Bread cookie cutters.
Oh, I love Ninja Bread cookie cutters.
Well, here you go. We actually have video of the Ninja Bread cooking cutters out of the box.
Oh my gosh, it's an unboxing?
It's an unboxing of Ninja Bread cookie cutters.
Oh, I think it's one of our viewers. Oh, this is fantastic.
Thanks to Chiv Bean.
Nice. Ordered the Ninja Bread. There they are! The Ninja Bread cookie cutters unboxing.
Ninja Bread.
This little kid yells out,
of course,
Ninja
I know in the audio you can't see him, but they're the ninja-shaped cookie cutters. So that you can make your holiday ninja cookies.
It's your gingerbread ninja cookies. Very cool. I'm glad. Thank you. I'm glad that I can influence purchasing so directly with this audience.
On to the emails, TNT at twit.tv. Michael T. writes in and says, regarding the lawsuit targeting Google over web referrals, one question. Why are they suing Google for something their browser is doing and Google has no control over?
So just rehashing the story. You type a search term into Google. It then, the next URL that it spits out with the search results has in the URL your search terms.
Right.
So then when you go to the site.
When you click on one of the results.
It knows the previous site and that has your search terms
because
in it.
Because since 1993, I think, browsers have always reported the referral link.
Right.
Which is how we track
where you get your traffic.
And find out where our traffic comes from. I use it all the time. It's perfectly normal. And Michael's right. It's what the browser does. The browser could stop it if they wanted. Yeah, I guess Google could change their entire link system so that the search terms don't show up in the link, too.
I mean, I can honestly not think of an instance where this is a problem. I was listening to the show yesterday, and I was trying to go really, like, hardcore, like, okay, let's think about this. Maybe I search, like, porn.
Yeah.
And somehow, all the time.
And I'm like, you know,
what does searching porn three porn, times in
porn,
time
porn, porn, porn.
Really funky porn. You do it three times. But then let's say somebody has bought the ad on the side to save me. Like maybe it's like, if you're searching for porn, you need to buy Dianetics by L. Ron Hubbard. So I'm like, you know what? That's a really good point. I'm going to have a conversion moment.
Yeah.
I click on that and I go to that site and then they know that I was searching porn. And I went to their site. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, I cannot find one instance where this is a problem.
In fact, it's a very helpful thing for me as a website runner to, I don't know you did it. I don't match it up with IP address, but I know like these are the search terms that led to your site. That's how you do search engine optimization.
And we're continuing with this privacy theme. It does seem that there is. This was a really good point on yesterday's show.
I bought
another
salad today, by the way.
I know about your proclivities towards salad. Trust me.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good point yesterday on the show that there is a privacy backlash in that we've been crying more privacy for so long. And now people are going, okay, wait, we've gone too far. So this is an email from, hold the phone. It's from, oh, I hate it when I can't read it.
Thank you for reading an email. Your email is very important to us.
I think it's, I can't read
the guy's
name.
Please stay on the podcast
Tom?
Until Becky finds the email
Tom,
name.
Please help. It's from Tom.
It's from
sorry.
Tom, yeah.
I listened to all the talk on TNT 103 about Google Street View. Sorry, help me out here. I must be missing something. So they black out your house at 123 4th Street, Anytown, USA. Do we no longer know if the house exists? Do we have no idea what the address might be between 121 and 125 4th Street? Are the Google coordinates removed from the Google navigation? Do I cease to know the address of the house I was looking for in the first place?
Yes.
Other than someone's personal decision not to share, why should I care, really, as long as the app in its entirety still exists? It's the app that's the creepy part. The rest
really
is just
app.
Details. Well, that's, I know, app web Miss app. Homer.
But yeah, he's saying, look, the fact that Google is going out mapping everything is creepy.
But we've had maps
for
a long time.
We've had maps forever, yeah. I think the reason people want it blurred is they're like, hey, you know what? I have a huge 10-foot bong on my porch. I don't want that on Google Street View until Prop 19 is passed in California.
And then hell yeah.
Right?
I mean, what they say.
I think that story in Long Island where the zoning commission was looking for unpermitted pools was the one that really touched the hot button.
Yeah, right.
I think you're onto something. I mean, really, someone was really upset because it showed a picture of her walking down the street in front of, you know, close to her house, walking her dog or something. I'm like, someone driving by could see that any day.
Yeah.
It's gone crazy time.
All right. If you would like more crazy time, we'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. Check us out at twit.tv/TNT. You can find us by email, tnt@twit.tv, or you can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.